This is Sound Effect on KPLU. I'm Gabriel Spitzer, and to wrap up our show on childhood dreams, we head back now to the early 90s. Sound Effect contributor Arwen Nix was just 10 years old, but she might have been a little too grown up for her own good. While a lot of 10-year-olds might have been writing fan letters to movie stars or musicians or athletes or whatever, little Arwen was writing letters to the First Lady of the United States. She shared this essay.
We moved from Los Angeles to Phoenix when I was 8. My parents divorced after my mother danced in and out of rehabs and asylums for a few years. And when my father won custody, he moved us closer to his family in Arizona. I decided I was the reincarnation of John Lennon. I wore fringe vests and flashed the peace sign as my salutation. And nobody argued with my coping mechanism. 4 hours into my first day of fourth grade, I was sent to the principal's office for listening. I had done the jumping jacks that I was told to do in PE, despite my broken foot. I was a good kid. My dad took me on all his first dates and would ask me what I thought. Did she laugh at the right times? Was she nice to the server? Did she talk enough? Did she talk too much? I'd have some ice cream and he'd smoke some Winston's, and I always got to decide if there would be a second date. I was the kind of child adults loved, and I had no friends. I felt shunned at school. I didn't play tennis or go to church. And when word got out that my family was Buddhist, my teacher asked me if I needed to leave the room during the Pledge of Allegiance. Then a girl named Golfo spread a rumor that we sacrificed goats at my house. At recess, I'd sit in the field. Sometimes I'd be invited to listen to a girl named Chandra retell what happened on Star Trek The Next Generation that week. And I'd pretend like I wasn't allowed to watch, so I could be enthralled like the other kids. But I had seen it, and I wasn't enthralled. I had no idea how to talk to children. I remember a lesson about the elections and the presidents, and we all got assigned to write a letter to President Clinton. I decided not to write to Bill. I wrote to Hillary. It was 1993, and America was obsessed with Hillary Clinton, but nobody seemed to like her. I was only 9, but I liked her. Her hair seemed clean, and she seemed smart. She had a cat named Socks, and I'd never had a cat, but I did have a dog that I named Susan Socks. So I wrote her a letter asking questions about her cat, and a month or so later, I got a picture of Socks in the mail. There was a paw print signature stamped on it, and I thought it was very impressive. I decided to write to Hillary again. This time I asked her if she'd seen the movie Benny and June and if she liked it, and I told her that she probably should watch it because it seemed very important. I handed the letter to Mrs. Schubacher, and I waited for my response. A few months went by. Chandra invited me over for a Star Trek The Next Generation themed slumber party, and I went, and I didn't cry, and I spoke to at least 2 children and all of the adults. A girl named Egda Peretta started and asked to sit next to me. She was my first real friend. Ever. I asked her if she liked Hillary Clinton, and she said, sure. I wrote to Hillary, and I told her about Egda, and I invited the First Lady to a sleepover. Fourth grade ended without any more letters from Hillary. It was summer. My dad wasn't working, so I got to spend all day with him. I wrote Hillary again, and this time I included a drawing. The letter reads, June 10th, 1993. Dear Miss Clinton,
I would love it if you would come to Phoenix August 1st through 5th, because my birthday is on the 2nd and it would be the best day of my life. You are the most powerful woman in the world, and I want to be just like you, able to be helpful to the world and make a powerful statement. Help kids, help schools, and go public. P.S. I'll be 10, and you're invited to my birthday party. Your great fan and supporter, Arwen Nix.
Pretty cute, right? The drawing's the best part. Hillary is in the center, but I've spelled her name wrong. It says, Go Hillary, H-I-L-L-E-R-Y. She's standing, wearing pearls, and there's a banner above her that says, I am woman, hear me roar, I am stronger than Al Gore. Behind her, you see Bill Clinton, who I seem to have drawn in the kitchen, which I labeled kitchen, and he is either loading or unloading a dishwasher. Hillary has a talk bubble that reads, Bill? Leave me alone. I'm ruling the U.S. He responds from the kitchen. Yes, dear. I handed the letter to my dad to send to the White House. I'd seen the news and I knew the First Lady was busy, but this was the letter that was going to be the one that got her to sleep over. I felt it. It was all about compromise. And I'd given her months to get her schedule in order. But she never wrote back. For Bill Clinton's second run for president, I was the single rock the voter at my middle school. I learned about oral sex from CNN. I watched the world watch Hillary. Then the world stopped watching Hillary, and I stopped watching her. I delivered a lot of pizzas. I started drinking. I dropped out of 5 colleges. I moved to Seattle. I dropped out of 2 more colleges. One night at a restaurant, I got to meet Bill Clinton and was so starstruck, the only words I could get out were, "Thank you for democracy." He smiled at me. I was wearing a blue dress. I started working in public radio. My dad got sick and I flew home to see him, and he gave me this adorable thing he found the other day. It was my letter to Hillary. I was livid. "I can't believe you didn't send this." I could hear that teenage tone in my voice, that tone that seems to be reserved for my father despite the fact that he may be the only person that has ever really loved me. "Honey," he said, "it was too cute." I ended up with an invitation to go with my father to Bill Clinton's 65th birthday gala in Los Angeles. It was 2011. I bought something black, used my grandmother's old Anne Klein clutch, didn't wear earrings because I couldn't figure out how to make them look classy with my "I just figured out I'm gay" asymmetric haircut. I had the letter in my purse. Our table was in the back because it was a kind favor from a gracious cousin for us to be there at all. We ate and drank and bands played. People gave speeches. My father was gleeful. He couldn't believe he was in a room with these people. "Look, it's Jane Fonda!" He said it so loud. "I know, Dad." I felt like the adult, but only in the way that he seemed to be having a lot more fun. I was waiting for the night to get to the point where the Clintons would walk from table to table and thank people. I opened my purse and I checked on the letter. I'd put it in an envelope, but I didn't seal it shut because I wanted to watch her open it. I was sure she would love it. I closed my purse and I waited. My father grabbed my hand to walk us towards Bill Clinton. He sauntered up, then walked between 2 Secret Service agents and shook Bill Clinton's hand using both of his. I stayed behind the wall of suit that protects the president, and I smiled at my dad smiling. Then I saw Hillary. I was 30 and then 10 and then barely 2 feet away from her. The paper of the letter was so thin in my hands and it felt so special. I looked at her and was not sure she would love it. My father made his way over to me, and I asked him if we could go. He didn't ask if I was okay. He didn't question me at all. He just put his arm around me, and we headed for the door. In the car, I asked my dad if I could smoke, and he just rolled down the window. He had quit when he had heart surgery. Grabbing for my cigarettes, he could see the letter still in my purse. "You didn't give it to her?" "No," I said. "It's just too cute."
That essay from sound effect contributor Arwin Nix.